The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John.
Glory to you, O Lord.
A man named John was sent from God. He came for testimony to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to testify to the light. And this is the testimony of John. When the Jews from Jerusalem sent priests and Levites to him to ask him, "Who are you?" he admitted and did not deny it, but admitted, "I am not the Christ." So they asked him, "What are you then? Are you Elijah?" And he said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." So they said to him, "Who are you so we can give an answer to those who sent us? What do you have to say for yourself?" He said, "I am the voice of one crying out in the desert, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' as Isaiah the prophet said." Some Pharisees were also sent. They asked him, "Why then do you baptize if you are not the Christ or Elijah or the prophet?" John answered them, "I baptize with water, but there is one among you whom you do not recognize, the one who is coming after me, whose sandal strap I am not worthy to untie." This happened in Bethany across the Jordan, where John was baptizing. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
The church tells us to rejoice, a commandment to rejoice today by the vestments, by the altar linens, by the hymn we sing, "Rejoice, rejoice, O come, Emmanuel." By the introit, "Rejoice in the Lord always." By the psalm, "My soul rejoices in my God." By the first reading, "I rejoice heartily in the Lord." And the second reading, the word "rejoice" is there. Brothers and sisters, rejoice always. So the church is telling us on this Sunday in Advent to rejoice. Now, what does rejoicing look like? Because sometimes we can fall into the trap of thinking joy, thinking to rejoice means to be very neat and tidy and put together and everything's got to go right. Call that the hallmark of joy. Hallmark joy. You know, because at the end of a Hallmark movie, everything comes together, right? It might be some this way and that way and something happens and then finally it comes together in the end. Hallmark movies. Okay, I asked this trivia question. A trivia last week. How many Hallmark movies were made for the 2023 Christmas season? How many? Any guess? Four. Who got that? Oh, you were there? Okay, good. You better get it. 44 Hallmark movies. That's a lot of wrapping presents. That's a lot of putting up trees, right? And Hallmark movies are okay, but sometimes they give us a false idea that this season of Advent and leading into Christmas is all about nostalgia. And joy is not just nostalgia. Joy is not just the lack of suffering. In fact, if you experience suffering, especially in this time, this is your season. Sometimes people who are in a hard place during the holidays, they feel left behind because everyone else is put together and they see and everything's nostalgic and it's nice. But maybe this is your first holiday without a loved one you lost this past year. Maybe something traumatic happened in your past around this time. And every year, this time actually brings a little sadness. That's okay, because joy is not the result of the lack of suffering. Often, joy is the result of a graceful reception of suffering and hardship. I've come to find out that the people that have the least amount of hardship or suffering, the ones who are most comfortable in the world, are not the most joyful. All you got to do is turn on e-television or read the tabloids. Don't read the tabloids. But if you were to read the tabloids, you'd see like, wait, the people who have everything we could ever want or think we could ever want, Have all the comforts in the world. You can jump on jets and fly everywhere, eat the best food. End of the day, that doesn't bring joy. The paradox, those who give up everything, like our religious brothers and sisters, those who deny themselves purposely and they say, you know what, I'm giving up these things in the world. They're the most joyful. Go spend one day with the Missionaries of Charity. That's who's joyful. Right? So joy is not comfort. Joy is not neat. Sometimes even sorrow is a prerequisite for happiness. We see this in the joyful mysteries of the rosary. During Advent, I don't know if you know this, but during Advent, when we pray the rosary, we often pray the joyful mysteries. Every day, doesn't matter what, it's the joyful mysteries. And yet in the joyful mysteries, we notice that sorrow and joy go together. Have you ever noticed this? The Annunciation is the first mystery, joyful mystery of the rosary. So Mary's told she's going to be the mother of God. That's a joyful thing, but there's also a sorrow to it. Because everyone else around her who's not in her inner circle, they don't see the mystery. They see scandal. You ever thought about that? This woman is pregnant, out of wedlock. It's a little sorrow there because no one else understands. The Visitation. Mary goes, she's pregnant, she goes to see her cousin Elizabeth. And that's joyful. You're pregnant. She's pregnant. They share this joy. The baby leaps, John leaps in Elizabeth's womb. And yet, there's sorrow because she had to travel on a donkey, pregnant, in the Middle East 2,000 years ago. I'm sure it wasn't comfortable. So there's a little sorrow there. The Nativity itself, Christmas, a joyful moment, and yet there's no room in the inn. Do you see how there's sorrow associated even with these joyful mysteries? The Presentation in the temple is another joyful mystery where Mary and Joseph present Jesus in the temple to fulfill the Jewish law. A joyful moment, except that Anna and Simeon prophesies to Mary. It says, a sword will pierce your heart. So in this joyful mystery of presenting Jesus, she's told a sorrowful thing. A sword will pierce your heart. And then finally, the finding of Jesus in the temple. I don't have to tell you why there's a sorrow in it. Because they lost him. Joseph had one job. Just take care of Mary and take care of Jesus. And then he loses him. Right? They find him, so it's joyful. But do you see how their sorrow and joy go together? They're not opposite. So if you're experiencing sadness in this time, you're not far from the saints, you're not far from holiness. John of the Cross actually says this. He's a Carmelite, mystic, spiritual master, spiritual director of St. Teresa of Avila. Look on your sheet that was handed out. Here's a quote. You can take this with you. This is John's talking about receiving the consolations of God, and it has to go through the cross. Would that men might come at last to see that it is quite impossible to reach the thicket and the riches and wisdom of God. Okay, so that's the consolations of God. The thicket of the riches and wisdom of God. That's what we want. That's joy. But except by first entering the thicket of much suffering in such a way that the soul finds there its consolation and desire. The soul that longs for divine wisdom chooses first and in truth to enter the thicket of the cross. So you can't separate the cross from rejoicing. The gate that gives entry into these riches of his wisdom is the cross, because it is a narrow gate, while many seek the joys that can be gained through it. It is given to few to desire to pass through it. That's the key right there. Many want the joy of the Nativity, but they will not pass through the thicket of the cross, as John calls it. People want the baby Jesus, but they don't want the travail. They don't want the pregnancy. People want the joy of Anna and Simeon, but they don't want the heart-piercing sword of Mary. Joy and sorrow go hand in hand. They're not separate. And fearing the sword of sorrow sometimes makes us do things that actually deny us joy, that cause us to sin gravely. This is the heart of a broken humanity. We're all broken. We're all fallen. So one of the things we do as society is we run away from suffering. We grasp after comfort, even when it means that it makes us sin. We would rather sin than be uncomfortable. We'd rather sin to avoid suffering. And the irony is that that sin actually denies us joy. When we sin, we're not joyful. We're not happy. Yet when we choose to suffer well with the Lord, that's when we're happy. Our society fears discomfort and sacrifice and suffering, and so it looks to eradicate it through any means necessary. Nowhere can this be seen more clearly than the way our society has responded to the issues surrounding the dignity of human life. And this is why I'm bringing this up, because this is the practical things in life. Theology isn't just up in the clouds and it's like, oh, I'm going to tell you all these nice things about God. No, this is where it lives in the world. These are circumstances that we will encounter, that you will encounter, that your loved ones, your kids, your grandkids will encounter. And you got to think about, how does the gospel in my own heart, in my own life, how is it lived out? Because you will be faced with a moment where you'll have to choose, do I suffer well with the Lord and therefore choose joy? Or do I run away from suffering? Do I sin and choose sadness? This can be seen in our society when we run away from suffering. We grasp at comfort at all costs. You know, in Canada in 2016, they legalized euthanasia. And euthanasia is kind of a euphemism. It means good death. It's not really a good death, right? So they made another euphemism. It's called MAID, M-A-I-D, Medical Assistance in Dying. And this is understandable, right? People are afraid. They're afraid of death. They're afraid of suffering more than they're afraid of death, actually, if you notice. So they run into sin. It's a sin. In 2016, it was legalized. And every year, the numbers have risen in Canada. So it's across Canada. Some states in the United States have this, but it's across Canada. Every year, the numbers have risen. Just this past year, they rose 30%. It's quickly gaining as one of the top causes of death in Canada. Our own demise, our own choice. So much so that the Canadian government, the official statistics of the Canadian government, they stopped logging MAID as a cause of death. They logged the underlying issue, right? So you had cancer, you chose MAID, they logged it as cancer killed you. Because they didn't want to look at the reality that they were running away. They were killing themselves and they're running away from suffering and choosing death, the culture of death. You see how our fear of suffering throws us into this situation. And we're not happy. We'd rather die than exist and suffer. It's not a good place. A couple years ago, I saw an article and it said, Iceland has eradicated Down syndrome. I said, well, that's good. How do they do that? Like, what kind of prenatal care are they giving? This is amazing. What kind of medication do they give to eradicate Down syndrome? We need to know. And then I looked at the article and they didn't eradicate Down syndrome. They eradicated Down syndrome people. Iceland was bragging, and still does, that they abort 100% almost of all their children diagnosed with Down syndrome in the womb. See, we run away from suffering. We don't receive it. We say, I'd rather sin. I'd rather kill my own family than suffer. Even just this past week, a woman in Texas publicly sued the state for permission to abort her child because of trisomy 18, a diagnosis, another genetic disorder. Has a more dire prognosis, actually, than Down syndrome. Many children do not make it past a few hours or maybe a few days. Some live a little longer, but the prognosis is not good. And it's a horrific diagnosis for a family, for sure. But whether a person dies in the womb, is born for 2 minutes, or lives for 20 years, you know what that person is? A person. Their dignity is not tied to time or size or stage of development or cognitive function or how beneficial to society they will be. Our dignity is tied to our being made in the image and likeness of God, no matter who we are and what we're like and what our genetics say.
A family handed the cross of a diagnosis in a genetic disorder. See, this is where stuff really gets real. This is not up here. It's not theory anymore. It's practical. We have to decide. We have to look different. It's not just a facade. It's not just a season. Like, oh, I like Advent. I like Christmas. I'm Christian. I like to sing Silent Night. No, this is where it's in your life. This will happen. And it may have already happened. And the Lord loves you and He loves your family. If you've experienced this, and there's always mercy and there's always forgiveness. But there's truth, and this is the truth. Suffering, even the great suffering that someone experiences when they're handed a diagnosis of these genetic disorders, receiving that suffering will give you joy. It won't look like a Hallmark movie, but it'll be real. And to reject the lie that the world says, run away from suffering, handle it, get rid of it, grasp at comfort. No, that will only bring death and that will only bring sadness. As we've seen today, true joy is not found in the absence of suffering, but in its faithful acceptance. We can't run away. We must accept. I do not know why the Lord gives some of us different crosses. But I do know this, He loves you. I do know this too. I've never looked into the face of a child whose family decided, we're going to fight for you and we're going to have you and we're going to take on this and regretted that. Who's more happy? You think our world's happy or our children with Down syndrome are happy? I think they know something we don't. And if Satan wants us to be sad, of course, that's his goal. Get rid of everything that'll ever cause us suffering, and we're going to destroy all people who don't fit this certain mold. No, that's not the answer. This last week, because of this issue in Texas, I was reminded of a story, and I asked the Pattersons if I could share this story. So I'll end with their story. The Pattersons, they live in Zachary. They go to St. John the Baptist. This is right here at home. They're parishioners at St. John the Baptist in Zachary. Some years ago, they decided to participate in a 9-month novena for children in danger of being aborted. Okay, so this is, they don't know these children. It's just spiritually, they're going to adopt a child somewhere in the world that's in danger of being aborted, and they're going to take it on their family. And for 9 months in a row, right, that gestation period, they're going to pray for this child. They were told to name this child. They named this child Mary Teresa. The novena ended on November 1st, All Saints Day. They offered their sacrifice, their prayer for this child. On that night, they learned they were pregnant. And their initial joy was challenged when they received the very same prenatal diagnosis as the child in Texas, trisomy 18. They were told that their child would have a limited life. See, this is what families, this is what you face. You go and the medical community might even tell you, like, look, you just choose termination, limited life, and it's really, you're being compassionate. Well, the Pattersons say, no, that's not an option. In their own words, this is what true joy is. This is not Hallmark. This is not nostalgia. This is what they said. This is true joy and true fulfillment. The Lord filled us with His peace, and we surrendered to His will for her life. That's joy. Peace was not the absence of suffering. They were surely dying inside, but their soul lived. So did she. They prepared for a delivery by buying a casket. Families have to do that. They bought a casket for their child that was not delivered yet. Even as they went home from the hospital, they went home on hospice. It was 2 years ago. Mary Teresa is still alive. They turned her casket into a toy bin. That's where they keep her toys. When we look into the lives of the saints, you do not see a Hallmark movie. Often you see struggle and suffering and pain. You see fidelity. You see meaning. You see joy. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say it, rejoice. Please stand for our profession of faith.